In that prayer, we offer humble obeisances to Sweet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who knows the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and who is establishing the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu within this material world. So that verse is very clear to the Vaishnavas who are following Srila Prabhupada. Because we see that Prabhupada is really such a Rupa Nuga devotee. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission, in part, was to spread the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, throughout every town and village of the world. And Rupa Goswami, knowing the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who certainly wrote so many books for the purpose of spreading Krishna practices. And Prabhupada actually fulfilled this desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So how intimate and dear and associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Prabhupada. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu shows him of all the billions and billions of personages in existence, billions and billions and billions and billions and billions and billions, unlimited billions. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had such an intimate associate, perform this confidential pastime of spreading Krishna consciousness throughout the world. Yesterday we were reading from the 10th chapter wherein Krishna explained that he would tell of his opulences to Arjuna. Because if Krishna himself did not tell of his opulences, there would be no way that Arjuna could know them. Because through our tiny brains, which are limited, as explained in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we have a field of activities, which means, looking at it in a rough analogy, just like we have a house, and that house has a backyard. And when you put a little small child, a baby, in that backyard, it has a fence around it, so he can play to his heart's content, but it is limited where he can play and how far he can wander and what he can play with, depending upon what facilities are within that backyard, that playground, so to speak. So similarly, there is Chetra and Chetragya. The Chetragya, the knower of the field of activities, is the soul who is conscious, and the Chetra is the field or the expanse of the material world within which we have the facility to be conscious and dominate to some degree by that consciousness. So, regardless of how big our consciousness is, how big our chetra is, the field of our activities, even if it extends like Lord Brahma's does to the ends of the universe, still, because Krishna is beyond the universe, beyond matter, we cannot even catch a glimpse of his greatness, because it is beyond. We can speculate and come to the point of understanding that whatever exists within this material world has nothing to do with Krishna. He is beyond it. And therefore we can speculate through speculation, be thinking that Krishna is impersonal, is arupa, he has no form, he is aprakriti, he is non-material. But to actually understand that Krishna has a transcendental body that is so beautiful, with his transcendental smile, with his transcendental lotus eyes that almost come to his ears, with his transcendental hair falling in the darkest waves to his shoulders, and filling up his flute with the liquid nectar from his lips. So how will we speculate and come to that conclusion that this is the Supreme Lord? How will we, through our speculative powers or intelligence, understand that when Krishna's flute played, that the Yamuna stops flowing? How will we understand that? And that rice, milk, and ecstasy, and that calves lift their ears as if they were cups and try to catch the liquid nectar as it's flowing from the foot of Krishna. How will we understand that through our experiences in the tetra of the material world? It is beyond. And if we hear about these qualities of Krishna without hearing from them from the right source, we were guaranteed to think of them as mundane. We are guaranteed to think of them as mundane. Therefore, the intimate dealings of Krishna in Braja are not for faithless people. They are not for neophytes. They are for those who understand something about the transcendental world, or some transcendental experience already, and are not limited to the material world. Otherwise, we will take our material concept and place it upon Krishna and assume that Krishna is something like us. But we will have no idea. So therefore, we follow the purifying process. We hear Bhagavad Gita, understand it deeply. We hear Srimad Bhagavatam from the beginning and understand it deeply. And then we can have a glimpse of the nectar, which is Sri Vrindavan Dham. Yet it is that Sri Vrindavan Dham that is the goal. And serving Krishna in Sri Vrindavan Dham is prayojana. That is the goal, the perfection. Becoming the servant of the servant of the servant of those who want to please Krishna. For those who actually have the capacity to please Krishna. It's very hard for us to accept with our big false egos, pardon the expression. But Krishna doesn't need our service, and all the top positions are filled. Srimati Radharani is there. Lalita is there, Vishakadevi is there, Tungavidya is there, Chitra. All the gopis are there, all the coward boys are there already. Mother Yasoda is there, Nanda Maharaj is there, Kundalata is there, everyone is there already. Rohini Devi is there, all the top positions are filled. And they all have servants. And all the servants have servants, and all the servants have unlimited servants. And if we go there, we're lucky if we get to do anything. And even if we do it, something, they don't need us. So the goal of Krishna consciousness is to become an insignificant servant. One of billions and zillions of quadrillions of servants. You still want to go? Very difficult for the conditioned soul to accept this fact. That I can never become anything wonderful or big. I can just become an insignificant servant. Anyway, no one's left the room after I said that. That is a good time. So we're ready to go further and hear something about Krishna's glories. Now, Krishna has already explained this most confidential, not most confidential, but it is the greatest description of his opulences, complete, that he will give in the Bhagavad Gita. This is Tattva Sloki Bhagavad Gita. Aham Sabasya Prabhavo, who has memorized now? Bolo? Bolie? Hamsavasya Prabhava, everyone together. I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. Everything emanates from Krishna, yet Krishna is playing in the spiritual world with all of the sources. Nothing is separate from him. And we also are not separate from him. Vishnu Shakti Paraprokta Chetragya Pratapara Avidya Karma Samganya Tritya Shakti. That we are Krishna's internal energy, but not like Chit Shakti or Vishnu Shakti, but we are just Jiva Shakti or Chetragya. We are tiny parts of Krishna. Tiny. The Tasta Shakti. 517. Right? And then, after understanding deeply that who Krishna is, getting some glimpse in one sutra, Aham Savasya Prabhava Mataksavam Prabhatate, that he is the source of everything and everything comes from him. The wise who know this, Itti Madhva Bhajante Mam. What do? Bhajante Mam. They worship him. Buddha Bhavas. With great devotion and great attention. That is the symptom of devotion, that we do that seva with great attention. That is affection. We want it to be just right for Krishna's pleasure. Then the next step, what do they do? What is the nature of the bhajan, of the service of these wise devotees? Machita madgata prana. Bodhyantas Paraswara Katayantas Chamam Nityam Tashyanti Charamantika. So, Machita, their consciousness is focused on Krishna only. Only. They don't have to struggle to focus their minds on Krishna. It comes quite naturally to them. Just like when Uddhava came to the gopis in a wonderful place outside of Nandagaon, called Uddhava Kyari. He delivered the message of Krishna to the gopis, the letter, and he told them Krishna's words, and yes, I am not here, but I'm always in Vrindavan, aprakat. In the spiritual level, I'm always in Vrindavan. Padam ekam na gatstiti. Vrindavanam pritya ja. Padam ekam na gatstiti. Krishna never leaves one step out of Vrindavan. So Krishna told the gopis that you just remember me, and I will actually be there in those remembrances. And the gopis just looked at him. You're telling us that we should remember Krishna as if that's our problem? Our problem is that we need to know that we should remember Krishna. Our problem is we cannot forget Krishna, even for a moment. This is Krishna consciousness. This is high-level Krishna consciousness. That is the difference between Ruchi and Ashakti. That in Ruchi, the mind wanders away from Krishna. When attachment is there, Ashakti, then the mind wanders to Krishna. So Madhita Madgata Prana. That one's life is dedicated to Krishna. One's consciousness is dedicated to Krishna. One's life is consciousness. And then, Bodhyantas Paraspara, that amongst themselves they're always preaching and speaking. And Katyantas, that means speaking Krishna Kata, Mam Nityam, how often? They don't gather once a day or once a week, but all the time, 24 hours a day, to Mam Nityam. And the result of that is Tashyanti Cha Ramanti. Satisfaction and great Rama, great bliss. This is a wonderful level of Krishna consciousness, very high level. Baba. Tashyanti Chara Manti Chara.
This verse describes Baba.
Why not? The last one also. Doesn't it say that? Buddha Bhava Samanvita. Huh? With great attention. And the rest of Bhava is also described here in 10, which we'll speak about right now. So this becomes the satisfaction of a devotee, that he's satisfied just being in Krishna, Krishna Katha. This brings him such pleasure and satisfaction, Sashanti Charamani, associating with devotees, Tandera Jarana Sevi Bhakti Sanira, Janami Janami Hoy. That is the desire of a devotee. That is the source of his happiness. He doesn't long for anything else except to be in the association of devotees and to preach, to satisfy preaching amongst themselves and preaching amongst others also, to make others, make them join the Gana of Krishna, the group of Krishna. That's what actually preaching is ultimately. It's recruiting for Krishna Lila, devotees, more friends for Krishna. Then, on the next verse, continues. The last verse explains what they do. They like so much to just hear about Krishna, the devotees, and they derive great satisfaction. But do they just, do they hear only? Or what is the, how do they realize? What do they actually realize? How do they realize? Is it just by hearing? Actually, Krishna and Krishna Katha are the same. This is the nature of the Absolute. On the Srimad Bhagavatam and the books of the Goswamis, the Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, they are no different from Krishna. They are Krishna. The Bhagavatam is Krishna, how Krishna incarnates in Kali Yuga, Poranarko Dunodita, like the rising sun brings light. The Bhagavatam arises in Kali Yuga. But is it just hearing? Text 10 explains the nature of the perception of the devotees. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buri ogam tam yena mamupriyantite. That when someone is satata yuktanam, always engaged in devotional service, as just mentioned, knowing, having that sambandha gyan of who Krishna is, what his position is, that everything is coming from him. Vedanti tat tatvavidas tatvam yad jnanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaneti sabhyate. Understanding that Krishna is also the source of Paramatma, also the source of Brahman. Brahmanohi patishtaham. Krishna will explain. That I am the source of that Brahman. It is resting on me. So when someone understands that, that is aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. So one understands that and then does his bhajan continuously, satata yuktanam, bhajatam, and does that service continuously, shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, vishnu, etc. But not just doing it mechanically or doing it because he's supposed to do it, but priti purvakam, in loving ecstasy, with priti, loving affection, then Krishna says how he reciprocates with such devotees. And these two verses describe Krishna's reciprocation with the devotees for their bhajan, their loving bhajan of priti purvakam. Vidami buri yogam tam. I give them the intelligence, but this intelligence, this divyogam, is very, very special. It is not just intelligence, because they already have ramanti, they already have bliss, what do they need buddhi for? But this is actually Krishna himself, through his energies, descends into the heart of the living entity. And this is actually Baba. The Dami Buddhi Yoga, I give them, I give them this Buddhi Yoga, Yena Mam Upayanti. And that Buddhi Yoga directly comes from Krishna. That understanding directly comes from Krishna. That bliss directly comes from Krishna. Krishna enlightens the devotee from within. Krishna himself does this. Yena mamupiyanti say, and therefore they even come closer to him. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So he gives them his devotional service. And he helps to go from bhava to prem and prem upward even. This is all, it's all Krishna's arrangement, it's all Krishna's mercy. Now the last person is. So this is Krishna's mercy. Well, why does Krishna reciprocate with them? And that way by Dadami Bhuliyogam Tam, why does he reciprocate?
He's kind of it.
Yes, he's kind, but why? What makes him kind?
Yes,
because they're serving him. Yes. Yes.
So because they have love.
Yes.
Love.
Yeah, all these are right. Because their desire to be close to Krishna is insatiated. Insatiable. They so much desire to love him and serve him. That Krishna cannot resist this intense desire of his devotee. This is why, actually, Jiva Goswami describes this in his commentary to Rupa Goswami's Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Samita Sindhu, that bhakti, the quality of bhava bhakti is, who knows the two qualities of bhava bhakti? That's one, that's the one we're looking for, and the other one?
What did he say first?
Sudhoda bhava, very, very rare.
Bhava-bhakti.
Yeah, bhava-bhakti means high-bhakti. There are three stages, sadhana, bhava, and prema. Moksha-lagudakita, the bliss of this bhakti derives liberation. And sudolabha, it is very rare, this stage of bhakti, where Krishna actually, as Prabhupada is going to explain later, everything happens automatically on this platform. On it's all blissful, one connects directly with Krishna's internal energy. And then one is actually a devotee. Up to that point, we aspire to be devotees. We are servants of the servants of the servant. Of course, we never lose being servant of the servant of the servant, but we're aspiring. But at that point, we actually become devotees. So it is so rare, because one has to have deep, deep, deep greed, deep desire. And Krishna will reciprocate with that great ruchi ashakti. But if we don't have that, he will not reciprocate in this way. He'll reciprocate in so many other ways. But when we desire only him, when we have that type of attachment and that type of taste, then and only then, if he desires, will he bestow this mercy upon us and make us his very own. And then Tesham, this is the other half. He gives and he takes. Tesham eva anukampartam, to show them special mercy, these kind of devotees. Aham agyana jam tama, I remove the darkness. Nishyam yatma bhavasto, the atma bhavasto, the darkness within their heart, he dispels that. Jnana dipena bhasvata, with the light knowledge. To show them special mercy, I dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So, just like a bee will enter a lotus flower, when our hearts become like a dham, Krishna will actually directly enter into our hearts. When our hearts become like lotus flowers, what does that mean? When the heart, sudha chitte, when it becomes completely pure, and suitable. This is actually described so sweetly in Chaitanya Charitamrita when the description of the cleansing of the Gandicha temple, when it describes how one's heart has to become spotless, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cleaned the temple of Gandicha for the Lord to arrive there. So similarly, our heart has to become spotless. Sometimes we want Krishna's mercy, we pray, Krishna, give me your special mercy. But actually speaking, in one sense, Krishna cannot descend into our heart, because our heart is not suitable sitting place for Krishna. Why isn't it suitable? Because there's so much dirt there. And what is that dirt? So many materialistic, selfish desires that we have. So many contaminations, so many desires other than being a servant of Krishna. So Krishna won't sit there. So when the heart becomes as clean and pure as a lotus flower, blossoming, when it actually becomes a dham, full Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness, cleansed from material desires, saturated with the desire to serve Krishna, then Krishna will surely come. So sometimes, we should want Krishna's causeless mercy like that, and Krishna's causeless mercy comes. But someone still has to be qualified. Just like we read about Narad Muni, that Bhakti Vedanta gave him causeless mercy, that's described. But yet it describes Narada's qualities, and his qualities attracted their causeless mercy. So we want causeless mercy in a different sense, so we don't have to work. And we can still be, at least I shouldn't speak about you all, at least myself, so I can still be the same selfish, petty rascal that I am, and yet I can still go back to God and enjoy myself there. That's my plan. But Krishna won't reciprocate with that plan. Yeah, he will reciprocate with it, but not the way I want. He'll make sure I clean my heart. He'll put me in situations that... See? To make me make choices about what I really want. And then, when the heart is actually clean, then one can really desire strongly and purely. And then, one can really have a deep taste. Tattraloyam apimulam ikalam. This is the one price, this deep greed. But as long as we have so many other desires within the heart, real greed cannot come. It's like if I really want to learn how to play the mridanga, but I also really want to learn Bhagavad Gita, and I also really want to learn how to jog properly, and I also really want to learn how to cook, and I also want to really make money and build a house, and I also really want to play the harmonium, and I also really want to learn writing and fundraising and everything. I'll have so many desires, so many that the resolute determination will never become there to play mridanga or any one thing. Mahushaka. So many branches of desires. But when ekeha kurunandara vyavya satuka buddhi eka, when the consciousness is fixed, it's like a laser. A laser, although light can cut through steel. And just an ordinary light, is life. So when the consciousness has so many anarthas, what is anartha? What does artha mean? Dhamma, artha, kama, moksha. What does artha mean? Yeah, something valuable. Anartha means? So we have so many things that we value that are actually not valuable within our heart, but we hold them so dearly. These are our anarthas, material desires. There's so many forms of anarthas. Riddha, Dolava, Masat, Krishna, Aparad, and Tattva, Vibhram. So many anarthas within our heart. So Shravanadi, Shuddha Chitti, Koribe Udai. By hearing, then these anarthas will go away, and then when we act. So Krishna destroys everything. He'll take care of everything. But we have to do our part to make our heart very, very clean. And if we have no other desire, then Krishna will help us so much. And even if we have a little desire, he'll help us so much. But if we have pure desires, very powerful and pure desires, then Krishna will help reciprocate with that. Yeyetamam prapadyante. Even though that verse is in which chapter of the Bhagavad Gita?
Fourth
chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Still, that same principle is applicable to us, except in the ninth chapter. We'll hear that it's not so applicable. We'll go to it in a minute.
But Krishna has said in so many verses that he is already there in everybody's heart. Ahamatma gurakesho sarva bhuta ashayastita sarvasya chaham rindikanyi vishtaha. He says that I am already in the heart of all the living entities. In the 13th chapter he says.
Anumanta chaham is there. But how does he deal with the living entities? That we're going to go to the ninth chapter right now, and that question will be answered when we talk about samoham sabhavuteshu,